Padumno. I'm alone in the library tonight. I've made a pledge to myself. No brown liquor. So instead I've made myself a gin and tonic. Restless, I carry it with me out into the hall. As our numbers dwindle, the house feels quieter, less lived in. The hallway's a bit more echoey. In just a week's time there will be no one left here at all. Just Betsy Martin and her small staff of helpers, slipping through the hallways like ghosts, disappearing each night to their homes in the countryside. I keep thinking about what Peter said about the missing staircase. I find myself wishing he were still here. I could use an accomplice. I would love to get my hands on Gerald's blueprints, but he seems less than amenable after his catastrophic day. I am tempted to knock on his door. It's not like he needs them anymore, is it? I could be concerned. Ask him how he's doing, then pivot and ask him for the blueprints. But something tells me Gerald would have very little tolerance for my bullshit. As though to confirm it, his door is tightly shut when I walk past. Instead, I amble out into the foyer, looking up at the grand staircase. I climb lazily up to the landing on the third floor. I pause, itching to turn to the left and sneak into the east wing. But I force myself to turn right and go into the west wing. I walk down the now familiar hallway, passing the door to my room on the right, then continuing down the hall. At the far end, the hallway ends abruptly at a large wardrobe. It is a hulking piece made of unfashionably dark wood, its legs curved out at the bottom, a decorative scroll-shaped carving outlining the top. I pause, take a sip of my drink. There is a creak behind me, and I turn around, but the hallway is deserted. I turn back to the wardrobe and pull on the handles. They stick at first, but then give way noisily, echoing down the hallway. I wait but hear no signs of life behind me. I give the handles one last yank until they pull all the way open. A moth flies out at me, and I wave it in a cloud of dust particles away, coughing. The hallway is dim at this end, the wardrobe too dark inside to see properly. I remember the lantern I passed sitting on a hall table and go back to get it, creeping once again past the rooms of the remaining contestants so as not to wake them. I pick up the oil lamp. It is clearly decorative, probably worth a fortune. A slim drawer in the table holds a matchbox embossed with the name of an old hat company. I pull back the glass cone and light the wick. It glows festively. I bring the lamp back with me to the end of the hall. Now I walk around the side of the wardrobe, inspecting it from all angles. It is pressed tight against the wall, but when I shine the light near the back, I think I can see something behind it. Is it the dark outline of a space cut from the wall? Going back into the cabinet, I reach past a wool blanket that's been decimated by moths. It turns to a fine powder in my hands. Disgusting. I shove it to the side. I reach out and tap on the back of the wardrobe. Solid wood. I move the lantern around the corners, and the light catches on something metallic on the left. A silver hinge, flush with the corner. I move away a stack of sheets and find another one, this time lower down. They're new, shiny, at least compared to the rest of the wardrobe. I scrape my fingers along the back right side until I catch on a small hole, drilled to the size of a finger. I pull on it and the back swings in, scraping along the bottom of the wardrobe. Behind the false back is a dark hole. I hold the lantern out. The light bounces dimly around the space, revealing a set of narrow stairs heading steeply into a black void. My heart flutters. The staircase is so narrow that my shoulders bump against the walls, my shirt catching on the peeling white paint. My forehead brushes against cobwebs. I hold the lantern out in front of me as I make my way up. The steps end finally at a hallway. I think not for the first time about how poorly designed old buildings are. They seem to be nothing but hallways. The ceiling is low here. The floor is merely painted boards instead of the grand finishes found in the other parts of the house. A row of white doors hang open at different angles, as though the rooms have all been left suddenly. I make my way down the hall, the floor creaking loudly. The rooms are nearly identical, each furnished sparsely with a wooden dresser, two single beds, still crisply made, with a shared bedside table between them. This is clearly not somewhere the more privileged Graftons spent their time. Peter was exactly right that they were the old servants' quarters. I shine the lantern into one of the rooms. The wall is angled sharply, in line with the slant of the roof. The windows jut out into narrow dormers. My heart lurches when I see something move, then realize it's just my reflection in a small mirror. I set my lantern down on the bedside table and slide open the drawer. Inside is a brown embossed Bible and an old piece of ribbon still tied in a bow. I shut it and sink onto the mattress, sending a plume of dust up into the darkness. I've left my drink downstairs, I realize. I wish I had it now. I look around the tiny room. Aside from the mirror, it is plainly decorated, the walls empty of any life. I wonder what could possibly be so secret about this floor that it's accessible only via the wardrobe. I lean back on the mattress, throwing my arms above my head and over the pillow in surrender. As my hand goes back, it brushes against something stiff and papery. I pull it out from under the pillow and move it under the lamp. It's an old black and white photograph. A spiderweb of cracks spread along its surface. In the picture, a man and woman stand close together on a grassy hill. The woman is wearing a fitted dress with a skirt that flares out like a bell. She has one leg bent up flirtatiously and is smiling broadly. She looks into the camera while the man gazes at her lovingly. Behind them is a dogwood tree in full bloom, its white leaves an attractive backdrop to their merrymaking. I sit up, hunching over the lamp to study it more carefully. I take in the man's mustache and his tweed suit. I recognize him. It looks like the paintings I've seen around the manor of Richard Grafton. But this does not resemble the dour man in all the oil portraits holding his rifle and staring stoically into the distance. This man looks alive and vibrant, his head tilted ever so slightly. There is a sound in the hall, a sharp creak in the floorboards. My throat goes dry as I wait to see if there are more. Another creak. There it is. Another step. This time with the scrape of a shoe in the hallway. Someone is out there, coming closer. I panic, looking around the room for a closet or someplace else to hide. Maybe if I moved right this second, I could squeeze myself under the bed. But I find that I'm frozen in place. Another scrape of a foot coming down on the floor, and it is too late. As the footsteps grow closer and closer, I stand up, balancing on the balls of my feet, and look around the room for some sort of weapon. At the last second, I blow the lantern out and tuck myself back against the wall next to the doorframe. There is one more heavy step as the person comes to stand in the doorway. I hold my breath as the beam of a flashlight hits the back wall, bouncing around the far side of the room, reflecting against the window where I can suddenly see the outline of a person. Who is it? My heartbeat roars in my ears. The figure steps inside, past me, shining the flashlight around the room. The beam lands on the lantern, catches the plume of smoke still rising off its wick. My pulse quickens as the flashlight spins around, hitting me in the face. I raise my arms, shielding my eyes.
Pradyumna?
A woman's voice asks timidly. She lowers the flashlight, and I can finally see her small frame.
Lottie? What are you doing up here?
She sounds frightened.
I could ask you the same question,
I say. She stays near the door, looking as though she is ready to flee.
I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk,
she answers tentatively.
You really are a terrible liar, Lottie.
She doesn't say anything. A prick of fear dances in her eyes.
Seems like a strange thing to be doing alone at 12 a.m.
Oh, does it? She gives me a withering look, then glances toward the door, making an invisible calculation. We're having some sort of standoff, I realize. Both of us are not where we should be in the middle of the night. Point taken. I step back, sink once again onto the side of the bed, showing her that she has nothing to worry about. She can leave if she wants. I have no skin in this, no interest in getting anyone in trouble. My morals are slippery enough as it is. I wouldn't dare impose them on anyone.
This area is off limits to guests,
she says, as though I wouldn't know that based on how I got here. What, you think you're the only one who should get away with sneaking around because you're old? Is that it? I ask.
Well, shouldn't age count for something?
She sniffs, and I can tell she is no longer afraid.
What's that?
She gestures with the flashlight to the photograph I'd set on the bedside table. Just a photo I found. I think it might be Richard Grafton and his wife. Living the high life from the looks of it. She hesitates and then reaches for it, holding it under the beam of the flashlight. I watch her mouth fall open. She sinks onto the side of the bed opposite me, clutching the photograph.
That's not his wife,
Lottie says, her voice wavering.
What? How would you know that?
I ask, incredulous. Lottie shakes her head in disbelief.
It's my mother.